Hello and welcome to this reflection from Stretton Vale Baptist Church. Last week we recognised that the resurrection has a life-changing, transforming effect, causing us to become more and more like Jesus each day. But what is actually changing in us? How are we being transformed by the amazing news that Jesus is alive? How do we know that we are continuing to grow and progress spiritually? Ultimately, we are asking the question of what does life with God look like? In life, there are numerous milestones that help us to know that we are progressing and growing and succeeding. Right from the moment that we are conceived, there are measurements and assessments to ensure that we are growing and developing correctly. While still in the womb, there are scans and tests to check on the progress of a fetus's growth. There are tests and measurements continue once a child is born, as there are continual checkups to look at growth and development. All through our lives, we measure our progress through reaching certain milestones, whether in education, work, family, relationships, wealth, material prosperity, etc., etc. These different measurements and milestones help us to know that we are growing and developing. But how do we know that we are progressing or growing spiritually? What are the markers, the milestones to help us recognise progress in our spiritual lives? Is it becoming more involved in church? More money being given in the offering? More time volunteered? The number of groups that you're a part of? The number of Sundays attended? These are all things that keep us busy, and perhaps they demonstrate our religiosity. But do they actually demonstrate growth in spirituality? Growth in faith? In 1 John 4, John writes this, from verse 15 to 21. If anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. This is how we know. This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. We love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command. Anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. Love. One of the ways that we know that we are growing spiritually is by growing in love. Faith is all about love. John explains that if we want to live in God, we must have love. Love for God and love for each other. He explains that our faith is founded on love. We are made complete by becoming more and more like Jesus when we learn to love like he did. When asked about the greatest commandments, Jesus summed up the whole of the law in two commandments, love God and love others. And following the example of Jesus, where Paul was speaking to the Corinthians about faith, he says, and now these three things remain, faith, hope and love, but the greatest of these is love. So it's fairly obvious that love is essential if we want to grow in faith. But how do we measure progress in love? How do we know if we are growing in the way that we love others? So one possible way to think about love is, and its measurements, is to consider who it is we love. The theologian and deep thinker Bernard of Clairvaux, a godly man who lived in the 12th century and chose to give up everything to live a life of simplicity and dedication to God as a monk, wrote a devotional on the topic of loving God. And in this treatise, he talked about the different stages or degrees of love. And in very simplistic terms, these degrees can be summarised into four words. Me, my, you and us. And so So in the period of time between Easter and Pentecost, we'll be looking at Bernard's four degrees of love and what they can teach us about developing and growing in our spiritual lives. As we go through each stage, ask yourself the question, where am I? Which stage connects most with my current experience? And then allow God to inspire and encourage you to grow and develop further as he deepens and strengthens your love for him and for others. So as I mentioned earlier, the first degree can be summed up in the word my. Bernard describes this as loving yourself with your own sake. This also known as selfish love. As we look at this selfish form of love, we will consider firstly how love turned in on itself is sin. Secondly, love of self is insecure and fearful. And thirdly, the gospel sets us free and shows us the way to perfect love. So firstly, love turned in on itself is sin. We are naturally selfish people. Our base and instinctive motivations focus on looking out for me, myself and I. It is in our nature to love, care for and look after ourselves. And in appropriate amounts, this is healthy. Self-care is important. I'm certainly not endorsing self-hatred or self-criticism. Thinking of and loving ourselves is important for well-being and our growth and development. However, the problem arises when our love for ourselves grows, as Bernard of Clairvaux states, excessively and like a strong current burst the banks of self-control, flooding the field of self-indulgence. It's quite a nice turn of phrase, isn't it? It's flooding the field of self-indulgence. But we can allow our self-love to grow into excessive self-indulgence. Equally, the reformers talked about something they referred to as incurvatus in se, referring to the heart bending in on itself. Martin Luther said about this, "Scripture describes man as so curved in upon himself that he uses not only physical but even spiritual goods for his own purposes, and in all things seeks only himself." So in this way, Luther and Bernard of Clairvaux and many others speak about when we allow our love of self to grow so immense that it consumes all other motivations. Love collapsing in on itself becomes a black hole that sucks in everything to use for its own purposes. Love requires others. That's its intention. When our love is projected on ourselves rather than others, the desire for self-satisfaction becomes all-consuming. Paul warns about this selfish love in 2 Timothy, where he writes to Timothy about the last days, or in other words, the days from Pentecost to the coming of Christ. So I'm going to read from 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1 to 9. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. Have nothing to do with such people. They are the kind who worm their way into homes and gain control over gullible women who are loaded down with sin and are swayed by all kinds of evil desires, always learning but never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. Just as Jannes and Jambres oppose Moses, so also these teachers oppose the truth. They are men of depraved minds who, as far as the faith is concerned, are rejected. But they will not get very far because, as in the case of those men, their folly will be clear to everyone. So in this passage, Paul warns Timothy about the dangers that come from an overindulgence of the self. In the space of 3 verses, Paul lists no less than 18 disturbing behaviours, attitudes and vices, which all originate from the root cause of too much love for self. As we saw in the passage in John, love is supposed to be directed outwards, to God and to others. If it is directed inwards, it becomes sinful. And we only need to look at our world to see the mess that is made if we are allowed to live lives that are governed by self-control. I mean, if we look into our news at the moment, to look at the Russian war against Ukraine, it is propagated by Putin's love for himself and his desire to stay in power. But of course, the sin of excessive self-love is not reserved for people in power like Putin. Any of us can fall foul of having an excess of self-love. In 2 Timothy, the people that Paul talked about are described as having a form of godliness but denying its power. Or in other words, they are people who might seem religious, but their love is not focused on God, but the self, and so they deny God his power. It can be, unfortunately, all too easy to turn faith, God and church to becoming all about self. If going to services on Sunday is purely about meeting friends and enjoying ourselves without a passing thought to worshipping and serving God, then we have to question our motivations. If we serve and volunteer because we want others to notice us, to praise us, to see us in high esteem, then why are we serving? For God or for ourselves? Jesus warned about this kind of false religiosity, saying, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honoured by others. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward in full." When we allow our love of self to take over, it becomes sinful and selfish. But secondly, this kind of love is also insecure and fearful. When our love is focused inwards, it can go one of two ways. It either becomes self-absorbed and seeks pleasure, regardless of who it hurts, like is described in the passage in 2 Timothy. Or it needs constant validation and reassurance that we are enough, we have done enough to be loved. If the person consumed by self-love does not get enough recognition, the desire for self-love screams out in the person's soul, "Can't you see how worthy I am? How can I demonstrate my worthiness of love?" Christian writer Tim Keller wrote, "The problem with self-esteem, whether it is high or low, is that every single day we are in the courtroom. When our self-love causes us to be filled with high esteem and pride, we turn to fulfilling our desires regardless of the cost to others. When our self-love causes us to have a low self-esteem, a neediness for validation from others, this too can cause us to act out or to have selfish motivations. When our love is focused on ourselves, then every day we attempt to prove ourselves and prove to ourselves and to others that we are lovable, worthy of attention and praise. And so, like Keller says, it's like we were in a courtroom, seeking to put evidence on trial to demonstrate how lovable we are. For a person of self-love, their self-image comes from being seen to be good. And so self-love works harder and harder to demonstrate that it is good. But it is exhausting to try to keep up with the needs of our own self-love. When we try to satisfy our ego, it will just want more and more and more, because the ego is fragile, empty and hungry. We can never find rest if our love is focused on ourselves. Psychologists talk about the tension that exists in most people between the people they want to be and the person they are. Paul talked about this tension when he spoke to the Romans and said, "I do not understand what I do, for I For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I do hate, I do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. As it is no longer I myself who do it, but it is sin living in me. For I know that good itself does not dwell in me, that is, in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do. This I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer I who do it, but it is sin living in me that does it. But we are so fearful of people discovering who we are, of people discovering that sinful, flawed person and disliking that person. When we are driven by self-love, we become fearful of people realising our flaws, and so we obsess over keeping up pretense, a mask that hides who we are and paints on this unrealistic version of who we'd like to be. This is not only damaging to our relationships with others, but also it is also damaging for ourselves, as it puts tremendous stress on us to keep up the mask at all times. And ultimately, it leads to us becoming anxiety-ridden and fearful. However, one of the many things that makes the gospel good news is that we are set free from the desire to please others and to find worth in what other people think of us. We are also set free from the constant drive to please ourselves, that drive to find satisfaction in the carnal pleasures of the world. But ultimately, we come up empty, as nothing can satisfy except God alone. The gospel is good news because it teaches us perfect love. The love that God has for us, and also the perfect love that he shares with us so that we can grow in love. Returning to what John said in 1 John 4, he reminds us that there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. We are able to experience this perfect love for ourselves because God loves us with this love. He loved us even when we were still in the depths of our sin. His love is not for us is not based on any of our own worthiness for love. God had many reasons not to love us, but God is love, and so he loves us perfectly without limitation or boundary. When Tim Keller said, "The problem with self-esteem, whether high or low, is that every day we are in a courtroom," he also declared that we have the answer to this constant state of being in the courtroom. He said, "Do you realise that it is only in the gospel of Jesus Christ that you get the verdict before the performance? We are loved before we can do anything to justify that love. We are treasured before any action of ours gives us a right to be treasured. We do not have to work hard enough to prove that we are good. We do not have to find self-enlightenment or gain some form of self-achievement. In other worldviews, the verdict always comes after the performance. However, in Christianity, the verdict comes before the performance. God has already marked you as precious, loved, treasured, worthy. And so God is able to accurately say that perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. We do not have to fear punishment or judgment, because Jesus, the embodiment of perfect love, has taken that punishment upon himself so that we can be freed. This is the wonderful news of the gospel. We are given perfect love, and we are set free from that need to strive. So as we consider what it means to have an excess of self-love, to have that selfish love, take a moment to examine your own heart. Are there areas of your life where you feel self-love has taken over or is attempting to take over? Ask God to refresh your heart with his perfect love, to chase out that selfish love and in its place put his amazing, perfect love. And as you go about your week, pay attention to your motivations and desires. It is easy for self-love to slipping under the radar. So think about why you do the things you do. To serve yourself, to serve others, or to serve God. And then allow God to encourage you to journey deeper and deeper with Him each day.